Mr. Pop.
I don't know anything about Angola, but Angola's in trouble.
This is Rock and Roll, your weekly shot of sport and music with Kevin Hillier, Rowan Connolly and Brian Mannix.
Well, greetings and salutations and welcome to another edition of Rock and Roll. Yes, it's our Rock and Roll Mad Monday edition because all the footy's finished, all the grand finals are done with, so it's time for our Mad Monday edition. And dressed as Mr. Rourke and Tattoo from Fantasy Island is the one and only Brian Mannix. Hello, Brian.
The play.
and Mark Fine. Hello, Finey.
Hi, honey.
Now, Finey's had something of a drama unfold in the minutes before we started taping this edition of Rock and Roll. Take us through it. Our man on the spot is Mark Finey. He's live from drama headquarters. What's going on there, Finey?
Well, I was in the garden doing some gardening, and unconnected to that, because coming in from over the roof and over the back fence was an enormous swarm of bees. I thought, oh, gee, there's a couple of bees. And then I thought, there's a million bees. And they did this sort of, they're fascinating bees because they follow this exact route as indicated by one bee who goes and flaps his wings.
Yep.
Basically, I was sort of ground zero for a swarm of bees setting up a new hive, which just happens to be in one of the trees in the front garden.
Oh, terrific.
But I stepped out of their way and they didn't bother me. And then I thought, look, I'm going to blow them off course. So I got the blower and they're very resilient. I sort of blew them 20 feet backwards and they just kept coming and coming. And as we speak, they're building a hive.
So squatters,
which cannot stand. I cannot abide because you know I've got a dog that forages in the front garden, et cetera. So I'm post podcast. I'll be looking for hive removal. I've actually got a mate of mine who lives around the corner who I went to school with, who's become an amateur apiarist, and I'm going to see whether they're his bees or whether he wants them.
Why don't you just get a big can of Bebo and sort them out that way?
You know what? I was thinking if I got enough fly spray, but that blow up was good because they were coming straight at me and it was my force field. I don't think a can of more toast is going to keep off 20,000 bees.
I don't think there's much point trying to blow bees, Finey.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, you know, Finey, is that sort of like a yellow and black invasion of your house?
Yeah, that's right. So I haven't had enough of it. My daughter being a Richmond supporter.
Oh, good.
Now, of course, Brian, you're going on the old expression, miss by a bee's dick. But when there's 20,000 of them, when there's 20,000 bee's dick, they do add up.
Well, good luck. Good luck with the bees, because you're not allergic to bee stings by any chance, are you, Finey? Or do you not know that yet?
I've been stung by bees. I just received the usual instant pain, and that's about it.
Right. Okay. Right. Well, good luck with that. They're quite menacing. I'm quite frightened of bees, to be honest.
Well, I think they're. I'm fascinated by their brilliance.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I admire all that stuff.
And you know, honey is the only foodstuff that doesn't deteriorate.
Oh, yes, it does.
No, it doesn't. It gets that, it crystallizes.
Yeah.
So, but if you warm it up, it'll go back to normal honey. And when they open up the caves of the pharaohs, like Tutankhamun, one of the things that they put in there were jars of honey, which were completely edible.
Wow.
Well, I wouldn't mind some for my toast. That'd be good.
and that's why they use it as like an antiseptic as well, you know, with wounds and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Makes perfect sense. All right, so how's your week been, boys? Brian?
Yes, it's been a week. And yes, thank you for asking, Kev. I've really run out of answers to this question.
Well, hopefully, as people know around the country, the lockdown is about to be opened, and Victorians are about to be released into the wild to forage and maybe even talk to each other and you know, do all those sorts of things that normal people do. So that looks like that might be happening. So next week, next time we speak, you might have a different answer, Brian.
Well, I hope so, Kev. I really do, because you know, I've just got nothing to report. Really, nothing. Absolutely nothing.
All right. Now, finally, we've had a massive weekend of sport. I mean, two enormous grand finals, gripping grand finals, a terrific weekend of sport with the, you know, the racing as well, with the Cox Plate and all that was great racing as on top of all that. So it's been a busy weekend. How'd you go watching all that stuff?
I thought the grand final in the AFL was good. I'm glad the way it played out, because I went to last year's preliminary final, so I sort of went to this year's grand final, quite similar games. Richmond's just got Geelong's number, so Geelong's going to shake things up a bit if they get Jeremy Cameron. That'll work well.
Yep.
Melbourne Storm, so here's something interesting as well. I live quite close to Melbourne Storm's, the Amy Stadium, is it called?
Or yep.
Yep. Park,
yep.
Whatever it's called. The rectangular stadium. And I'm planning to watch the game, but few minutes before, God almighty explosion, these loud bangs, and they were fireworks.
Oh.
Now I've got two dogs. One bought a collie that is never been exposed to fireworks. Well, Melbourne Storm decided for some reason that for the start of the game and for every score, not just try, every conversion, every penalty, they'd let off some fireworks.
Geez, the first half would have been busy.
It was busy, and then there was a little one in the second half, yeah. Then nothing, and many at the end of the game, by which time Willow, the border collie, was tearing holes out of the brickwork.
Yeah, that's so, well, why would they bother doing that given there's no crowd, there's no anything? What a waste of money.
No idea, but, you know, I love Melbourne Storm. I was hoping that they'd stop scoring.
All right, let's take the AFL Grand Final first up. Was Saturday not the longest day in the history of mankind waiting for that bloody game to start?
Yes. Yes, it was. And I didn't like it. I don't reckon it felt like a Grand Final. It just felt like a Friday night game or a Saturday night game.
Yep.
I'd say, well, if we tried it, don't do it again. I reckon it was, you know, the band's looked better, but I just thought that the game was seemed less important than it normally does. Didn't like it.
Yep.
Congratulations to both teams, but don't like the night grand final.
Yep. Finally?
No, you see, Brian Mannix has just encapsulated exactly how I feel, and I think how most football fans feel. Well done, Brian.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much.
I feel right. It's too late. It was, and everything Brian said, ditto.
Yep.
More like a Friday nighter than a grand final. And there's nothing more special. It's not more special to be in darkness and have wristbands and fireworks than it is on a beautiful Saturday afternoon, especially when the sun's out in Melbourne, to see that red gerund go sky high with a beautiful bounce to start a grand final. It is the moment.
Yeah.
And don't take the moment away. It seems as though Gil's got decided he's going to fiddle with everything.
Yeah.
A friend of mine was at the game, and he reckoned it was fantastic. He said, forget day ones. So if you were there, maybe it was great, but I don't know, this guy, he's probably pissed out of his mind. He's one of mine, mate, so, you know, who knows?
Interesting, that was kind of like the what everyone said about the entertainment too. I didn't think the entertainment pre-game came across terribly well on television, but I've heard from people who were at the ground who said it was actually, they thought it was terrific at the ground, but on TV it didn't work, yet I thought halftime worked really well.
Yeah, I thought halftime worked better.
Yeah.
Because it was still sort of dusk when the other ones were on.
Yeah.
But seriously, they've got to start, and the same with the NRL, they can't just pick an act because they're popular. You've got to look at what songs they're going to sing.
Couldn't agree
and,
more.
You know, that Amy Sharp on the NRL, you know, she's singing about her boyfriend or some bullshit. It's just, you know, you need songs that are, you know, like, well, I thought Wolf Mother, it sort of came to life a bit when Wolf Mother got it. You need that kind of high energy rock and roll of these things, not some soppy dickhead,
yep.
you know, whinging about their ex-boyfriend or something. Just, you know, use your brain. You know, get the village people. That'll be great.
Well, it's got to be audience participation or stadium rock.
Yeah. Not somebody with ballads.
Yeah.
You know, just, you know.
The DMAs are really good, and they do a great version of Believe, that Cher song. And I know Believe was the theme word of the AFL's advertising in Queensland, but the song didn't work. It just didn't work for me.
Did you see on the Twitter, somebody had tweeted, why have we got gay vampires doing a cover version of Powderfinger at the grand final?
Oh, that's very cruel.
Yeah, I thought it was, but that's pretty funny too, though.
Yeah, it is funny, but it's very cruel. What do you think, Finey? The entertainment part of it.
I didn't watch the pre-game entertainment. I was preparing food for the family. Half time, you know, that Dan Shepherd out of Queensland, out of that area, even the name, now I know it's the surname of the lead singer or whatever, I was just looking at them, the name Shepherd, I think they're about to head into Christian prog rock. They look like something Hillsong has unleashed on.
They do a bit.
They get a gig at Festival Hall.
Yeah, exactly.
They're all ready, correct. They're all ready to rock it, to start rocking it with Scott Morrison and the gang.
There's halftime entertainment the world would pay to see. And the Gabba, it was a once-off, as we're told, but it's back to the G forever and a day, hopefully with the 2 o'clock start, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's all right. I'm willing to give him half an hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't have the halftime sprint at quarter time.
Oh, yeah. Well, now, why did that happen?
I don't know.
Because that sort of crept up on me too, and I saw it and I thought, hang on, isn't that halftime? And then and the other thing too is I think you've either got to make up your mind that it's either going to be a full-on night game or it's going to be a daytime game. The twilight thing to me is a compromise between two warring factions that can't make up their mind what time they'd really like this game to start.
Yeah, now, I agree.
A twilight game would be terrible. I've been to twilight games at the MCG, and there's that period where it's neither one thing nor the other.
Yep.
Hard to pick up the ball. Not good for football.
Yep.
Yeah.
And let's definitely face it, at the end of the day, that's what we go there to see. You're actually there to see the grand final. You're not there to see Shepherd or Wolf Mother or whoever.
Or the gay vampire.
Or them. But you're there actually to see the game. I tell you what was one of the most, emotive kind of sights of the entire day for me was watching Mike Brady sing on the MCG with just the didgeridoo player and him. I found that really kind of that brought the COVID-19 thing home to me like whack.
Right. I missed half of that.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, just there's no – if you've ever been in the middle of the MCG when there's no people there, maybe you're a Sheffield Shield cricketer or someone who's been out in the middle of the MCG, It's an enormous coliseum, and it is one of the loneliest places you'll ever stand in your life on your own.
Yeah.
And he just looked like someone who'd got lost, and they said, oh, yeah, just park your guitar and your amp over there, mate, and knock out a song for us.
Yeah, lucky he wasn't alone.
Yes.
There's a bloke with the didgeridoo.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know whether that worked, to be honest. But, and I'm a big fan of braids and always have been, but, not sure that worked. But it just brought home to me the fact that it wasn't at the MCG. Now, let's talk about the actual game itself. Finally, you mentioned that the first 10 or 15 minutes was, I thought we were going to have a bloodbath on our hands.
Yeah.
The AFL didn't, because they didn't see anything wrong with what Dangerfield did.
Oh, Ned, did I?
I'd like to see what would have happened. Look, he's the bloke. He's a champion, Dangerfield. Now, if he picks the ball up one-handed, snaps it around his body and it's a goal, no one would say that was luck or by mistake. And nothing he does on the field is accidental. And I guarantee you, if Toby Green or Ben Long would have done that, they would not have got off with nothing. No way would they have got off without a suspension.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to, you know, he protected himself by forearming a guy. And in a grand final, he knocked a guy out after 5 minutes, giving his team a numerical advantage. That's a big knockout.
Yeah, I agree with all that, but I don't think it was an act of violence. I think it was an act of protection more than it was an act of violence. And it was, I mean, when you see it in slow motion, I admit it looks damning. But when you see it in real time, I don't know that he could have done anything else.
I thought he was in trouble when he pulled a knife on the umpire. I thought that was going too far.
But yeah. Fonny, you obviously think that he could have pulled out of that. In real time, geez, I don't know.
You just go for the ball, but using a forearm for protection is it's a measure. You know, there's no doubt he could have dropped down. I know it's a split second, but they know what they're doing. And instead of putting out the forearm, you use the fleshy part of your upper arm. You sort of drop your body a bit. They know, footballers know what they're doing. He's been there hundreds, thousands of times before. And as I said, not every footballer in the AFL would have got away with what he just did.
Yeah.
There are players who would not have got away with that.
And in the third quarter, he pulled the old Bruce Bernard.
Oh, yeah.
He pulled out a pink. He had some rope in his shorts, and he got when the umpire was looking, he started choking the other bloke from Richmond, and it was just cool. I don't know how he got away with that one.
There you go. Now,
are you saying I'm wrong, Brian?
No, I'm just being stupid. I just like the idea of Dangerfield down at the forward pocket, pulls out his nunchuckers, starts going berserk, whacking people. You know, that'd be great.
Well, yeah.
All right, I'm an idiot.
Now, what did you make of the little master? Bruce actually stopped calling him Gary Ablett for the entirety of the game and just referred to him as the little master.
Yeah, that is so annoying.
Oh.
I thought Sachin Tendulkar was the little master.
I thought, I think you're right there. And I don't know if Bruce is aware of it, but there's actually a drinking game that people do every time that a commentator uses the term the little master. You have to scull a drink.
You wouldn't want to watch. I tell you what, you wouldn't. Now he's retired, it's okay.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't have wanted to watch a game commentated by, I always forget her name. She calls for Fox a little bit.
Kelly Underwood.
Yeah. She only refers to him as the little master.
Yeah, that's annoying because he has a name and that should be used. I mean, you can use the nickname thing at times, but not the whole time. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's sort of bowing at the altar. Yeah, we know he's a great player, but you don't have to use the superlative, you know, little master, son of God, every time he goes near the ball, and certainly not in the grand final, because I don't know why he was on for so much of the game. Certainly after he clearly hurt his shoulder the second time late in the third quarter, why he played in the last quarter, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
I had somebody, you talk to people and that, somebody reckons Ablett cost him that game, he could not have gone back on. Totally cost them the game. I didn't see it that way, but yeah.
Where does he sit in your all-time players that you've seen play, Brian? Is he in your top three?
No.
Okay.
Probably because his dad would be. And I think James Hurd, he probably would be, actually, don't you think about it? But yeah, he's probably one of the best players ever gone around, I suppose.
We all have a bit of a tendency to pick someone out from our own club that we barrack for that we think is, because we see them all the time and you don't see everybody else as much. Finally, does he sit in your top three?
No, he doesn't sit in my top 10.
In your top 10?
Mm.
Wow.
He'd be close thereafter. Maybe somewhere might sneak in at 10.
What about his, what about him didn't you like? Because it's obviously...
No. He's in my greatest team ever. I think that says plenty. He beat 11 or somewhere between 10 and 12, I reckon.
Okay.
Because I've got... Look, I've elevated Dustin Martin. I just think Dustin Martin is a superstar midfielder and also I reckon he's the best forward in the AFL. And he has delivered 3 premierships to Richmond. He's got them there and won them. You know, I mean, he's just a superstar.
Yeah, he is. He is. If you judge blokes on the big stage being where you judge them, geez, there's not many running around who've done better.
Yeah, and he's not, I mean, it's not a criticism. It is a bit of a criticism of Gary Ablett. He, but it's not meant to be because he's still in my best ever team. He is a bit of a, or was a bit of a possession hunter. And, you know, happy to divert the play to him for a handball. But I just don't think, even though he's kicked the ball beautifully sometimes in his career, I don't think he's as consistently as good a kick as Dustin Martin, for example. So, like, my best 5 players are not in this order. I'm not sure of the order. Lee Matthews, Dustin Martin, Malcolm Blight, and then the one that people go, really, but I mean it, is Simon Madden. I thought he was one of the best ruckmen I've ever seen. If you watch state football, it's just gorgeous to watch.
Yeah, true.
And he was an unbeatable centre-half forward. Now, that's a pretty good combination.
Yeah. Who's your 5th one? Is it Carey?
Well, then I'm not sure. But close to it is Carey. See, I love Keith Gregg, but maybe I'm raising the bar because he was just a genuine wingman.
Yeah.
Tony Lockett at his best was unbelievable. His best was at St Kilda when he could mark, when the ball had hit the ground, he was the best player off the ground.
Yep.
Beautiful. I mean, he was a great player, Tony Lockett.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so I'm not, it's not, and now I don't have Gary Ablett Sr. in the top 10.
Really?
Jeez.
So just because it's a bit selfish and a bit, it is a team game.
I wouldn't mind having him on my team.
Yeah, you'd want him on your team, but would your team want him on his team?
Yeah.
I know that. It's sort of a strange thing to say.
Yeah.
But
he's clearly one of the best players to watch. At his absolute zenith, Gary Ablett did things that other blokes just aren't capable of doing.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. So from a highlights reel point of view, he's always going to be in your highlights reel.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing was, being a St Kilda supporter, you know, Danny Frawley had a great record against Ablett.
Yeah.
So I never really saw him tear St Kilda apart. So if I was a Richmond supporter, I'd have Gary Ablett Sr. as my first pick. But he didn't quite do it against St Kilda. And in those days, if you went to the game, you didn't see that much of what else he did. You know, so... And I've got James Hurd very high up there. So...
Yay.
It's interesting.
Yeah. I'd find a place for Michael Voss in there somewhere too. I thought he was a good player, one of the best players I've seen. I love Voss.
And in my top 10, an absolute personal choice is Bernie Quinlan. Now, Bernie Quinlan was an absolute superstar.
Oh, yeah.
If it's called football, I just remember one day at Moravan. He kicked like 9 of them. But in the first quarter, he kicked 2 goals from outside the newly created 50 because they just brought it in, and both of them went over into the car park.
Yeah.
Now that's ridiculous.
Yeah, he's a beautiful kick of the footy. He played in a charity game at for the fight back at the end of 1989 when Bernie had been retired for a couple of years, even at that stage, I think. He played in a charity game and came out. And you saw him in his gear and you went, geez, he's still in good nick. He grabbed a ball at Skinner Reserve about, I reckon he was 70 metres out, and just hit it as sweet as a nut, and it just sailed through, and everyone just sat there and went, is it possible we can sign him up to come back and play? Because he's very good still. He's a ripping bloke too, which always helps.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. The NRL Grand Final, we've got to mention that. The Storm were unbelievable in the first half. Then the Panthers were unbelievable in the second half. second half. And then Gus Gould was unbelievable during the whole bloody match.
Who?
Gus Gould.
Gus Gould.
He's the commentator for Channel 9 who spent the entire game talking down the Melbourne Storm's chances of winning the premiership and how the scoreboard was flattering them. And he found every possible thing that he could in his armoury to make out like Penrith were playing better than Melbourne.
And when we got the two blokes sent off, he said, "We might be a chance here."
Well, he is a former general manager of the club of most recent times, and a mad New South Welshman. So the Queenslanders copy him during State of Origin, and they can't stand him for that. But he was the wrong choice to be special comments man for that coverage.
Yeah, fair enough.
Did your blood boil when you were listening to it, Farnie?
I watched it. I've got to say it.
Mm.
We had broached we broached new levels of Dick Henry. He, an unapologetic Gus Gould, even in the light of day, can't see how utterly, not only biased, but just inaccurate and subpar he was as a special comments person. Vunivalu had just scored a Superman of
a size,
one of the great tries of all time.
Yeah.
You know, the Penrith wonder boy Nathan Cleary throws a Hail Mary pass. He intercepts it, hits the ground, is able to get up, shrug off tackles, and run near full length. After which he makes his great comment of, "You know what? Except for the scoreboard, Penrith are on top."
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. It was was it 22-0 at that stage?
16-0. And then Cam gets the try just before half time. And as he's watching the replay that the video ref is seeing, he completely just loses all concept of being a broadcaster. And goes, "Oh, this is a, this is a something blow, a death blow, or, you know, to Penrith. How unlucky can you be? I mean, mate, enough of it."
Yes.
Then justifies himself. The fact is, with 8 seconds to go, it was, 26-14 or something?
Yep.
13 men versus 11. I still think it was a pretty comprehensive win, to be honest.
Yes, so do I.
And he claimed, "Well, I was right, wasn't I? They were the better team, mate." come down to Melbourne, and you'll have to self isolate for however long it takes for a broken door to heal.
Yes. I'll admit, it didn't feel like a 22-0 lead when it was a 22-0 lead. I thought Penrith were actually playing reasonably well, but Melbourne were just taking every possible chance they did, and Penrith were stuffing up everyone that they got. So that was the rub of the green. Even it mightn't have felt like they were 22-0 on top, but they were on the scoreboard, and that's, at the end of the day, what decides who wins the game. So, yeah, he was a bit out of line there. Cam Smith, I haven't seen anything of recent days as to whether he's going to continue or not, but based on what you saw on the weekend again and what, you know, you said this last time too, Finny, he just has to go around again next year.
Yeah.
Why are so many people sending him off? It's ridiculous. He absolutely goes around again next year. That team is clearly not as good yet without him.
No, I couldn't agree more.
You know, it's foolhardy. But whatever happens, do not let him play out his career with a season for the, who are they, the Brisbane Boomers or Bombers?
Yeah, no, don't want to see that happen. He's and look, I think that little speech he made at the end where he talked about the big V on the jumpers and said, you know, our home and all those sorts of things, that made me think that if he is going to play, he will finish at Melbourne, that he won't go somewhere else and play.
Yeah, I sort of think so too. And he did that. "You're guilty."
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
I really can't stand the rest of the rugby league world. They are so resentful of Melbourne
Yep.
Some of them still want to harp on about the salary cap. Melbourne got their grand final premiership taken off them.
Yep.
They got punished hell, well, and truly, unlike any other NRL club.
Well, Cronulla didn't get theirs taken off them. Yeah. They did the same thing.
Yeah, correct.
No one else got punished.
So, Kevin Smith, he's played in 6 winning grand finals with only 4 count. Is that right?
Yep.
Wow. That's good effort,
I think
it?
5. He didn't play in the first one.
The 99 one? Like, yeah, no, he wasn't in the 99 one.
No, he wasn't. That was the brick with eyes.
And didn't he miss? Didn't he miss one through suspension too? From memory,
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I think he might have missed one.
But I mean, even so, they do some cross to that stupid breakfast duo, Stefanovic and whoever he's with.
Oh,
and yeah. See Penrith scarf, and he's wearing a Storm scarf, and she goes, "Tomorrow morning, you know, join us on, you know, good whatever." And hopefully we'll be celebrating a win for the Penrith Panthers. And Carl goes, it'll be the Sunshine Coast Storm.
Sunshine Coast Storm. Okay.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, well.
Get the chip off your shoulder, mate. You'll be attacked by a giant seagull.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty ordinary. Now, it's Cup Week, Melbourne Cup Week, but it doesn't feel like it.
No. Doesn't feel like a spring carnival started at all.
No.
I miss the girls in their fashion, and I think that's what sort of makes me realise it's Cup Week, all the girls dressing up, and I miss that. I think that's one of the best things about it.
Well, yeah, everything that goes with Cup Week has been sort of lost, and I don't think the restrictions being lifted in Melbourne is going to make any difference to a crowd being at the Melbourne Cup. I don't think that's going to happen.
No, they're very announced, but for the week at Flemington, there's no crowd.
Yeah. Which will be really weird, really strange. I mean, watching the Cox Plate and the Manukato Stakes and things, they were two terrific races, but, yeah, there was something missing.
Yeah, people.
Yeah.
You know that expression, I guess it's somebody's take on philosophy or existentially, I don't know what it is, but do you hear, if there's nobody in the forest to hear it,
yeah,
does a tree make a noise when it falls down? Likewise, is horse racing, if you can't bet on it. Now, I refuse to get a sports betting account. I don't have one, never will. Don't like the idea of it. So with TAB's closed, I can't bet.
Well, they're open now, aren't they?
They are. But previously, if I couldn't bet on it, it's not a horse race. It's just a stampede of horses with men sitting on them.
It's interesting. Hopefully a good cup coming up. We'll get – now that the footy's out of the road, we might get a little more of the cup spirit going around the place. I certainly hope so, because Melbourne – God knows Melbourne needs it.
Yes. Dan Andrews is not cheering everybody up the way we'd like. So,
no.
Yeah.
But we've got some light at the end of the tunnel, so let's embrace that. Now, boys, we did the bad teams last week, and we're doing the good teams this week. May have made a few changes to your good teams based on what's happened in the last week or so.
Yeah.
Now, a little bit of feedback from last week's effort. Morris says, "I can't believe you missed the Washington Generals as a bad team."
Oh, yes, of course.
Yes.
Well, not exactly. What's this space?
Okay. Robert Rice has got a couple of mentions. He said, one being the Fitzroy team in 1964, who were the last team to have a winless season in VFL, AFL history. The other team is Derby County in the EPL. Their team of 2007-2008 hold the record for the longest run in the EPL without a victory, which is 32 matches. And also the earliest team to be confirmed with relegation. So Derby County and Fitzroy. But we're going to talk good teams.
Well, Fitzroy, you know, that Fitzroy team in 1963 and 64 were coached by Kevin Murray.
Oh, really?
And in the 2 years, they only won one game.
God.
That was the week that Kevin Murray was away playing for Victoria.
Oh, I have heard that story before, yes.
And
yes.
They beat Geelong, who went on to win the flag in 63.
There you go.
Wow.
It doesn't say a lot for the Bulldog.
No, it doesn't, no. Does it? I actually, speaking of Kevin Murray, tell you one thing I did, I didn't notice it, but it's been pointed out by the press in the last 24, 48 hours. The Richmond players tucking their premiership medals into their jumpers when Gary Ablett walked off the ground for the Guard of Honour, was that is a really classy touch, and I still haven't discovered whose idea it was. But what a really classy bit of thing that was. So as when he looks back at the photos, he doesn't see the Richmond players standing there with their premiership medals dangling around their neck for his last game. I thought that was really one of sports' great little moments.
Yeah, no one really remembers whose idea it was, Kev.
Yeah, I don't.
No, no one remembers. I don't know. It was just a sort of a group decision.
Yeah. Isn't it normally? Isn't it normally the bad ideas you don't remember, and the good ones everyone tries to claim?
Well, it's just there's been a lack of memory all around lately, and no one remembers whose idea it was.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I think there's something in the water around anyone to do with Victoria. You just keep forgetting things. Right.
Yep.
Now, where were we? Okay. We're going to do the good teams. So, finally, kick us off with your number five in your good teams.
Well, here we go. I guess I gave a bit of a clue away, but it is the Harlem Globetrotters. Now, the Harlem Globetrotters were not always a sort of a display team. They actually competed in 1940 in a World Professional Basketball Tournament where every team was trying, and they won it. So, fair play to them.
They didn't get disqualified for putting the ball down their pants and all that.
And they played the tournament properly. They also played, in 1948, they played a genuine game against the Lakers. Now, the LA Lakers. You ever wondered why they were called the LA Lakers, by the way?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, because they're not originally the LA Lakers. They're from Minneapolis,
there's no lakes in LA.
No, so they were the Minneapolis Lakers, the best team in America, and the Globetrotters beat them fair and square. So on those counts, they were playing genuine basketball. But then, of course, they became less serious and they started playing the Generals. So their longest winning run was, they've played more than 26,000 games, and they've only lost 389 of them. Now, how did they lose 389 games to the Generals?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Not sure.
Was it, you know, because they try and set a grandstand finish, was the final sort of trick shot didn't work out or something? I don't know. But at one stage, they went over 8,500 wins in a row. So I guess you couldn't bet on them. You'd be unlucky if you bet on them the week they lost.
How'd you feel that? Oh, yeah, I've got a short thing, the Harlem Globetrotters. Yeah. What do you mean they lost? Sorry? All right, Brian, what do you got at number five?
Okay, I'm going to go for 2012. Team Boys, Cha-Cha champions, undefeated Cha-Cha champions. I speak of myself, Brendan Favola, Johnny Ruffo, Melanie Hooper, Jeff Ruff, and Luda. We were on the Dancing with the Stars. We had to compete against the girl team. We're doing the Cha-Cha. Ben really won it for us because he could carry all three girls by himself. So let Fred, me, and Johnny Ruffo up. But what a team, magnificent, never, ever been beaten.
The Dancing with the Stars Cha-Cha team from 2012.
That's it.
Very good.
Me and Bev and Johnny Ruffo, what a team.
You know what's surprising about that?
What?
That you've only got it at number five. I would have thought you would have bumped that up to the top of the top of the podium.
Well, I should have, I suppose. But now I've got some pretty good ones coming up.
Okay.
Might just edge me out.
All right. My number five is, now I agonised over the fifth spot here because there's so many good teams I've left out of my top four. You know, I could have gone the beach volleyball team from the 2000 Olympics, the Opals, who are, you know, just always an outstanding team. But I finished up in the end. I even looked at, you know, the Melbourne Tigers there, like the Chicago Bulls were terrific. I looked at some netball teams, some swimming teams. But in the end, I came up with, I reckon, the iconic, one of the iconic Australian winning teams of their time, the Woodies.
Oh, good enough.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's all right.
I love the Woodies, and it was just so nice to be able on the big international tennis stages when, you know, Navratilova and Billie Jean King and Ivan Lendl and all those were all, you know, winning everything, and Connors and Borg and all them, the Woodies, the Aussie Woodies, well, would come along and win.
They've won 61 ATP doubles tournaments. They've won 11 Grand Slams. They've won 2 Australian Opens, 6 Wimbledon. They won a gold medal at the Atlanta Olympics, a silver at the Sydney Olympics. They're superstars.
Thanks, Bruce. what number have you got them at?
Me? Oh, I'm probably going to have them at 4.
Okay. All right. Beautiful. All right. What's your number 4, Finey?
Well, it is an Australian Olympic team.
Ah.
The 2000 men's 4x100 metre freestyle relay team.
Who was in that team?
So the team that won the gold medal was Michael Klim, Chris Feidler, Ashley Callis, and Ian Thorpe. They took on the mighty Americans, world record holders. Australia had not won that event 36 years.
Yep.
And they had to take on Gary Hall Jr., Jason Lezak, Anthony Irvin and Neil Walker. They were the world record holders. Lezak and Hall were world record holders in different disciplines. They were just brilliant. The Australians smashed the world record. And what a final relay leg it was, because Ian Thorpe got passed by the great Gary Hall Jr. with about 300 metres to go, but Thorpe dug deep. It was one of the great wins of all time, of course, and they won the gold medal. So it was pretty famous on home, I was going to say turf, in home chlorine, water, and they won it.
Is that the guitar one?
Yeah, you're going to smash them like guitars.
Guitar smasher, yep. Yeah, we smashed his guitars.
Yeah, that was one of the great moments. That is a sensational moment. Sensational moment in Australian sporting history. So your number 4 is the Woodies, Brian?
Yes, that's right.
All right. My number 4, and at the risk of gazumping others, the Queensland State of Origin team in rugby league. When you have names like, you know, Slater, Cronk, Smith, Hoffman, Slater, Cronk, Smith, Lewis, Langer, Meninga. I mean, there's a minion of them. The Queensland State of Origin team is one of my favourite all-time sporting teams. I love watching them. We got 3 weeks of it coming up. I think the first one's next Wednesday. And then State of Origin, I become a quasi-Queenslander because I spent some time there working, obviously, and living there for a long time. But, one of the real meat and potatoes, nuts and bolts, the great sporting teams that thrive on that and on that camaraderie and that mateship. The Queensland State of Origin team does it for me.
Well done.
Thank you. Your number 3, Finey.
My number 3 is one of the great soccer teams of all time, but they actually had the best record in all of Europe. They're called Steaua Bucharest.
Oh, okay.
And they are from Romania and obviously dominant in their own country. They certainly were. They won the national title in 4 consecutive years, 86 through to 89. But they had a 104-match undefeated streak during that period.
Wow.
Which is unprecedented in top-class European soccer. They weren't just good in Romania. They also won the European Cup during that time.
Wow.
So, they beat the best teams really in the world.
Yeah.
And that 104-match streak makes them one of the all-time greatest sides.
Very good. Now, what are they called again?
Steaua Bucharest.
From Romania.
Yeah.
All right. Number 3, Mr. Mannix.
Okay. No big surprise here, but I'm going to say the Melbourne Storm. under Bellamy, but they just, every year, they're in the finals nearly every year. They seem to play in a grand final every second year. They seem to recruit fantastically. They develop their talent well. They seem like really good blokes. I think Bellamy's probably the best coach in Australia. And for their consistency and their consistent excellence, Melbourne Storm. There you go.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And they seem to lose three or four or five players every year that you think, oh, gee, that's going to knock them around. And then lo and behold, they find blokes from somewhere. I mean, they're going to lose, what, they're going to lose Josh Adokar. They'll lose Suli on the other wing. I think the big, tall number 15, I can't think of his name and I can't pronounce his name, he's going as well. So they'll lose another three or four or five and they'll replace them easy enough.
Looks like when Israel Folau got injured, they brought in a bloke called Greg Inglis.
Well, have a look at Pappenhausen. I mean, Billy Slater is, you know, probably the best fullback of the modern era. And they find a bloke who was literally at one stage the fourth pick for that position. And he's now sort of a Clive Churchill medalist and a, you know, a emerging star of the competition and of World Rugby League.
Yeah, playing for State of Origin for the first time next week.
Yeah, yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, so that's got to be Bellamy and you know, just the talent spotting that they've got. They're a great team. Great team.
All right.
My number three, I've gone to footy and I agonised over which particular team I should put in at number three. You know, the great teams. So there's the Brisbane Lions, there's the Geelong, you know, three premierships, Geelong side. There's the Essendon mid-80s side, which I thought was one of the more formidable sides you'll ever see. But I keep coming back to the same thing. I keep coming back to the Hawthorn team of the 80s, the late 70s, early 80s, and right through the 80s and into the 90s, with Brereton, Dunstall, Platten, Dipper, Rocket E, Tuck, Ayres, Mew, Pritchard, Curran, Jarman, Buchanara, Langford. I could name another 15 that would fit into that. And that Hawthorn dynasty of the 1980s, to me, is still the best footy team I've seen over a 10-year period, if you want to use that as the yardstick. And they are my number three.
Fair enough.
Number two, funny.
Now, I'm not a fan of this sport.
Mm.
Never have been, never will be. It's called rugby.
Oh.
But I've got to admit that the All Blacks are one of the great sporting national sides, if not the greatest on the planet. They've got something like a 74% winning record, which is pretty impressive.
Yep.
I guess it's the World Cup. It's one, two. They probably should have won more. But the hold they have over Australia, their magnificent streak of unbeaten games at, is it, where do they play? Eden Park?
Eden Park. Eden Park's otherwise known as the graveyard for Australian sport.
Yep. I don't know them well enough to name their greats, except half of them have got the name Zinzan in it. The other half have got a Brooks or something. I don't know. They're all Zinzans, aren't they, if they're not Maori?
Yeah.
But they are certainly for a country, and I know not all of Australia play rugby, but for a small country, that is a pretty powerful team.
Yeah, it is. Yep, they are.
The All Blacks.
Yep.
They're scary.
Yes, they are. And I must admit, the All Blacks haka is one of the great sporting sort of rituals.
Yes, they are. They are.
Yeah. All right, number two, Mr. Mannix, where are we going?
Well, we might go to the 2000 Essendon team. Well, it was a great team. We should have won in 99. We should have done better with that team, but it was an awesome team. You had Scott Lucas and Matthew Lloyd kicking goals up forward. You had the two Johnsons, which were really tough. And you had Solomon, who was also tough. Gary Moorcroft. It was just a really great team. And they just won every game except for the one where the Bulldogs cheated. But anyway.
Whoa. Rewind the tape.
The Bulldogs flooded the...
Defamation.
Crap out of that game. But they were an awesome team.
They were an awesome team, but the coach came up with a tactic that would stifle their creativity to the point where they didn't win.
Yeah, it's flooding.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, well, no, I suppose fair enough.
And little side note, I had a wonderful night that night at whatever it was called at that particular stage, the stadium, currently known as Marvel Stadium. I don't know what it was called back then, but I had a wonderful night because I got the first and last goal kicker and picked up, I think, $100 for each of those. So I had a really good night. And then went from one end of the ground, walking around the arena back to the room where I was emceeing, giving it to the Essendon supporters as I went around. That was fun too.
Oh,
that was better than winning the raffle prizes. My number two, no, they were a very good team. They were
as
close to a perfect sort of lineup as you'd want to see. Tough and, they were a good team. My number two, I'm going to go to cricket because, cricket's very close to my heart. And I can't go past the West Indies team. Could almost name any one of seven West Indian teams, but the one that had Greenwich, Haynes, Richards, Lloyd, Dujon, Marshall, Holding, Roberts, Garner. They were hard to beat. And they're one of the great teams in terms of a great team of the success they had and just a really, really entertaining team to watch as long as you weren't the bloke with the bat 22 yards away from any of their fast bowlers.
Had you be facing like some of them bowlers, crikey, you'd be shitting yourself. Half the time they didn't even have a helmet on. Half the time.
Oh no! I went to a net session in Brisbane one day, and they got Alvin Kalajdzic was working for the radio station. He got me into the net session. And I stood literally where sort of first slip would stand, at the back of the Gabba nets. And Michael Holding and Andy Roberts were trying to take Alvin Kalajdzic's head off. And laughing about it the whole time, and they were off about seven paces off their normal run, and it's the most frightening thing I've ever seen. It just the speed and the total lack of time you had to do anything if you were thinking of hitting the ball, just staggered me. Staggered me. You would have loved the West Indies team of that era, I would imagine, Finey.
Absolutely. I mean, they were. I loved Viv Richards. It was the greatest fast bowling attack of all time. We'll never see the likes of it again, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But it was something else, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And if they, you know, if they didn't put 450 on the board before that, they'd roll you for under 200. They were an outstanding team. All right, we get to your number one, Finey. What have you got?
I have got a team that I hated at the time, but I've learnt to sort of love them. The great Port Melbourne side of the mid-70s to the early 80s.
Oh, wow.
In the VFA.
Yeah.
This dominant football team. Now, in latter years, through a connection with Gary Ayres and just that I admire them as a standalone club that's gone and won premierships, I've learned to really admire Port Melbourne, but for their fans, for Fred Cook.
Yeah.
For the defeat. I mean, that team... I mean, what a side it was. When you got guys like, well, obviously Freddie Cook's pretty famous.
Yep.
But you got Anderson on a wing, even though they didn't have wings, he decided he'd patrol one, the ex-Collingwood player. Little Tony Abeya.
Oh, yes.
Buster Harlan. The Christos. Glyn Evans. Of course, later, Dane Swan's father.
Yeah, Billy.
Billy Swan, a magnificent player in the VFAs, and Gary Bryce left South Melbourne. Up back, and I've played cricket against a lot of these blokes.
Yeah.
The incredibly mean Bob Proffitt, Whippet Holt, Vic Anderson in the ruck. God, I love Sunday. I'd play Little League, and if I was lucky, the game would be finished and I'd still be able to watch half a game of the VFA. And the mighty Borough had more characters in it, more drama, more theatre than any VFL side back in the day, I've got to tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, the best team in the land, but they dominated their football and it was a moment in time that will never be recreated. I bloody love them.
Yeah. Yeah, and tip my hat to them too that they've managed to survive through some pretty tough times of recent years, and they've done really well. They're a good club.
Yeah.
Good club. And I've had a fair bit to do podcasting-wise with them of recent, last couple of seasons. We've done some stuff, and Gary is, he's just a class act, and he's terrific. And yeah, really, really well-run club. Number one, Mr. Mannix, what is your team of the century of your lifetime?
Righto. From 1992, how's this out? Patrick Ewing, Larry Bird, Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley, Magic Johnson, just to name a few.
Yeah.
The USA Dream Team of 92. Jeez, nobody can beat them.
Yeah, they were good, weren't they? They kind of stuffed it up for everyone. They stuffed it up for everyone that followed them, though, didn't they?
What do you mean?
Oh, well, just in terms of there was never going to be a basketball team that was going to have, you know, Magic, Larry Bird and Michael Jordan. I mean, they're just the three, bang, off you
Scottie
go.
Pippen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great team.
Yeah, start, Patrick Ewing, all those blokes that played in that, yeah, unbelievable. And I'm not quite sure that there's the aura around the current players that there was about that, because the NBA's become a different animal to what it was back then.
Yeah.
And you talked to Andrew Gaze. And I'm sure you talked to Andrew Gaze about playing against them, Finey. They were all in total awe of them.
Oh, the little blonde bloke we had. What's his name?
Shane Heal.
He was just having a go at, yeah, he was back down from Charles Barkley. He said, yeah, come on, I'll have a go. Which was great.
Yeah, I reckon Shane got a contract in America based on that, I reckon.
Yeah, he did. I believe.
Remember that famous quote before their first game?
No.
They asked, because they were playing Angola, and they asked Charles Barkley, they said, Charles Barkley, what do you think about Angola? And he said, I don't know anything about Angola, but Angola's in trouble.
Charles is one of the great media performers. He's an absolute beauty. Which brings me to my number one, which is a media team, not a sporting team, but they're a sporting team in what they did, because they were just such an enormous part of every single summer. And I talk about Richie Benaud, Bill Laurie, Tony Gregg and Ian Chappell. They are my sporting team, best sporting team. The Channel 9 cricket commentary team of that era, with those four blokes heading it, I reckon just were the best. Never been anything like them since. I'm not that fond of a lot of the stuff that we hear commentary-wise in all sports these days, but back in the day, maybe it was because we were, you know, younger and hadn't been sort of had a lot of other sporting sort of commentary teams foist upon us apart from footy. But those four, I reckon they changed cricket, and they made cricket something that it had really struggled to be till then, and that was a national sport that everyone loved, that everyone kind of they gelled it together. They made it happen.
That's a great call. Well done, Kevin.
Yeah, good one.
Excellent. Very good lateral thinking there. Like, it worked perfectly, didn't it? Richie was understated, had a sense of humour, but it's what he didn't say or his pauses that made him gold.
Yep.
Tony Gregg clearly enjoyed when Australia was not going well.
Yep.
He couldn't hide it, but he sort of kept it under wraps. Bill would work off that. You know, it was great, you know. You won't be happy about it. You won't be happy about it. Tony won't be happy about it. That's terrible bowling by England. Terrible. He won't admit it.
it was the epitome of the four blokes that you would love to have at your dinner table just shooting the shit, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I mean, for Tony Gregg to survive the comment he made about that wedding in South Australia.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, there were a few.
You know that one, don't you, Brian?
Yeah, there was a wedding. What did you say?
An Australian gentleman marrying an Asian woman, and he didn't realise he was on the mic or on, and he said, looks like he's been flown in.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they got away. They survived a lot of those things. So I think Chappelli got into trouble, didn't he? Didn't he get into trouble for something to do with on air with Kate Fitzpatrick?
Wide World of Sports. He said, "Jesus, that was
He let the F-bomb go.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that was uncommon. Bill, I don't think Bill ever got into trouble, and Richie certainly never got into trouble.
So I had a moment with Richie.
With Richie, yeah?
Bomb stake. So I was at the – I was holidaying in Surfers Paradise, as I often did, and I was at the Gold Coast races, and they just had one of their feature events. It was a sort of a Group 2 race they had called the Silk Stocking or something. It's the fillies or mares or something.
Yeah.
Anyhow, they've gone past the post and they've won without numbers. You know, I mean, they just the absolute rank outsiders have run first, second, third, whatever. And I'm under one of those. They have these sort of tin sheds with no sides to them.
Yep.
Where you'd bet and have a beer. And I'm looking up at the screen and I'm standing next to Richie Beno. And no word of a lie, he is wearing one of the cream, the bows or whatever. He's in this light colour clip. And we're both looking up at the screen. And when they do the dividends, they do the Quinella and they do the running double. They get to the trifecta and it says on the screen, too big to calculate. And Richie, talking to me, because there was no one else there, goes, trifecta, too big to calculate. Not for the bloke who won it. And I said, that's right, Richie. He goes, yes. And walked away. And that was my moment with Richie that I killed.
I had a moment with Richie because I got the original recording of The Twelfth Man, and I knew who it was because he'd done some work with me because he'd been a writer. Billy had been a writer with Ostentatious. So I rang Billy up and said, this is you, isn't it, doing The Twelfth Man? And he said, well, no one's supposed to know it's me. That's why I put it out as The Twelfth Man. I said, I've got an idea. I want to run it past you and see if you're okay with it. And he said, what is it? I said, I want to send it to Benno. I said, I've got a contact at Channel 9 in Sydney and they'll pass it on to him. And he said, oh, okay. So I got it to Benno and I arranged to ring Benno on the Monday morning. Got it to him on the Friday and said, have a listen to it over the weekend because I spoke to him and said, I'm going to send you this thing. Have a listen to it over the weekend. I'll call you Monday and have you on my radio show to tell us about it because the record had started to get a bit of airplay. So I rang Richie on the Monday morning. And as Richie would do, you know, he answers the phone. And I said, so, Richie, tell us, you know, you've heard this 12th man thing. What do you think? I thought it's pretty funny. Mrs. Benno wasn't too impressed with the language, though. Thought that could have been toned down just a little bit.
I tell you what, Kevin.
That's a pretty good Richie Benno.
Or is Richie there? Are you channeling? Are you having a sale?
Richie was. I won't say he was good about it, but he said yes. It's very funny, just the language. And then obviously the thing went through the roof, and it became, you know, Billy became a massive superstar out of it. And I have a gold record out of that that proudly sits on my wall for my involvement in that, but it was good fun. But it was really interesting. Richie was as straight as a die. You couldn't believe how sort of absolutely straight he was. There wouldn't have been a hair out of place, or, you know, the jacket would have been buttoned up as he was sitting there at breakfast telling me, yes, just a little bit on the language, that's all. All right, boys, that was good fun. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. Oh, also, before we go, my audio book is available on iTunes and Google Play.
Wow!
I don't know what's happened with the other one. So it's there. So look it up. Hell, I didn't even like Al Green.
Oh,
available
wonderful.
On Google Play and iTunes. So
and
there
while we're talking about fabulous teams, the next edition of the Life of Brian podcast will feature the man who arguably captained one of our greatest teams ever, Steve Waugh. Is the guest on the next one, and a man who was never a team player. Yes, he was. Sam Newman's the other guest on the next Life of Brian.
Well, we look forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be out. That's that'll great. Be out before Cup Day. Now, speaking of which, next week we record this show obviously on a Tuesday. Next week is Cup Day, so have a week off, boys. Enjoy enjoy the release of COVID-19 lockdowns being eased a bit, and we can get out and about at least 25 kilometres from our home at this stage. So enjoy that, and we'll convene in a week after that.
All right, fantastic.
Excellent. Now, I'm heading back into the garden.
Jesus.
Hopefully I'll survive, but under no circumstances when we reconvene are we to do the best and worst of Sting.
No.
Sting. Yeah, very good. I like it. I like it a lot. Take care. Look after yourself, Finny. Don't get stung too much.
Well, you know what? They, you know what they say? What is it? Money for honey, honey for something, just for free? Yeah. I'm going to become an apiarist. I'm professionally, you'll be able to buy fine honey this time next week.
All right, good luck. Right. Thanks, Finey. Take care, boys. I'll talk to you in 2 weeks' time.
Bye.
You've just experienced Rock and Roll. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Facebook.